Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, the Fidelity Investments Canada podcast, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. Portfolio manager and director of research Joe Overdevest sits down with host Emily Ananuevo on today's show. Joe, who has been with Fidelity for nearly 20 years, explores the trends affecting Canadian markets, from economic reopening to Canada's place in the global economy. Joe shares what his role entails as a portfolio manager and director of research, which includes managing a team of research analysts. Also, Joe and Emily discuss the value of advice and how ignoring the noise and headlines while staying focused on the long term can be a wise approach. This podcast was recorded on June 29th, 2021. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
Joe, I'd like to begin with a bit about you, your background, your story. I know we've spoken on several occasions, and I know that you grew up on a tree farm in Ontario. You graduated from Wilfrid Laurier with a business finance degree. Just curious, were you always interested in investing, and did growing up on a farm influence your career choices at all?
Yes, growing up on the farm, the tree farm in Wyndham Center, Ontario, very small town, obviously, it was great. Worked alongside my family every day and taught me two big things, how to work hard, and number two, how to respect others. And I hopefully carry that forward in the work I do as a steward of people's capital today. Did I ever envision doing anything with investing? No, for sure no. And that's the benefits of going to university and doing co-op programs and working alongside other investment professionals in the co-op program, being introduced to it from my studies. I said, this is really interesting. It's very intellectually stimulating. You get to learn lots of businesses. Instead of maybe going back to run the family farm, maybe I'll put that on hold for a little bit. So it's been a few years. I've been putting that on hold, obviously. And maybe mom and dad hopefully someday expect me to return. But so far, the long vacation has extended and I've really enjoyed it. I think investing has been just an amazing time. Just if you're interested in learning new things, there's always something out there. And I'm sure we'll talk about some of those subjects today.
Absolutely. And you're definitely doing something right. Like I said, you've been with Fidelity close to 20 years. You're portfolio manager and director of research. Can you just briefly explain what your both roles entail and your responsibilities?
So as a portfolio manager, as you mentioned, I run money, essentially picking stocks in the Canadian market in particular for pension funds, endowments in Canada and actually globally as well, not just for Canadian clients. And for the Global Natural Resources, it's a retail mutual fund I run alongside Darren Lurkaker. Essentially, what we're doing is we're meeting CEOs on a daily basis. There's every 30 minutes of business day, there's a CEO meeting happening at Fidelity. We're talking with lots of our investment analysts, our credit analysts, our global research analysts who are doing asset allocation, deciding what are the best stocks for investors. And so it's a very encompassing experience. Lots of information, and we want to drill it down to the best of breed in Canada or global, wherever portfolio we're focused on, is really our job for portfolio manager. Director of research, I work alongside 9 extremely talented Canadian analysts. They do an amazing job. Essentially, my job as a director of research is to make sure they have the tools to do their job because they're so talented. I just need to make sure there's nothing that slows them down from picking the best stocks for our clients.
Fantastic overview. Thank you. Now, before we get into the crux of our conversation, some main investment themes investors should be focused on. I want you to speak to our audience a little bit about how the Canadian markets have fared this year. I mean, it looks like it's on a positive upward trend, obviously different than this point last year. So how are the Canadian markets looking like, Joe?
Canada, you know, happy Canada Day early on, happy Independence Day as well for our neighbors, but Canada should celebrate. We're one of the best markets in the world right now from an equity perspective, and obviously currency is doing well. And why that is because of a few big buckets that really drive our markets. And, you know, it's financials. The Canadian banks are doing very well. They put a lot of reserves in place. Essentially, the means is when we were in, you know, 2020, they didn't know how bad things were going to be. So they are very conservative and put a lot of money aside for potential losses. And so far, those potential losses are less than they expected. And if anything, they're starting to, you know, the general talk is, can they maybe do buybacks? Can they maybe do dividends if the government allows it, the regulator in particular? Also, a big help to the market has been energy and resources in general. Copper, oil, and gas have done very well. And again, as we're opening up the economies of the world, one of the biggest beneficiaries is commodities, because as we move out of our homes, out of Zoom, we sometimes drive a car, we may fly, or we may start building, and all these things involve commodities. And so those are the two probably biggest lifts we've seen helping the Canadian market. And I'm sure we'll talk more about them as they go forward today.
Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned the government support and the commodities, because that leads me to my next question. Like I said off the top in my intro, Canadians are riding this wave of optimism, right? People are getting vaccinated, provinces are opening up, and we're traveling again. But there are still concerns ahead for the second half of the year. Joe, what would you say are the three main investment themes investors should be focused on when it comes to the Canadian markets and the reopening of our economy, if you can break it down to three main topics?
Emily, I think this is a very good point we should talk about, because right now, you know, before it's kind of the dream phase, we're hoping we're getting out of this, we're hoping we're all moving again. The dream is almost over. We're going to start waking up. We're going to start deciding, are we going back to the office 5 days a week, 3 days a week? What is our normal life as we get, you know, hopefully past COVID? And so what I think number one theme is earnings are really, really important. A lot of stocks have moved up, but the next, say, at least 12 months, maybe even 2 years, we're going to find out very clearly where earnings didn't go up as much as maybe the market thought, and those stocks will start falling off, or people are too punitive on certain sectors as well, that we may still use online shopping. And everyone thinks we're never going to use online shopping again. Certain things have been changed maybe forever. So earnings will really, really matter. I think we've really been sharpening our pencils to make sure what are the best companies out of this, because behaviors aren't always exactly what you think it is. And a lot has been changed with the pandemic, and certain behaviors may be forever changed. Number two would be commodities. I'm glad we talked about that. As we move out of here, you know, there's certain commodities that are definitely benefiting from it. As I mentioned, copper and oil. And again, we kind of mentioned a little bit, but we can talk about this, is that also what's happening in commodity space is ESG. And carbon neutral is a focus. Well, ironically, if you look at carbon neutral, copper should be a beneficiary. Electric cars in general, or any kind of electrification, needs more copper. Oil is actually the opposite. Longer term, if you want to go to a carbon neutral economy, generally oil will face more headwinds. But the more interesting thing is, as we get there, if no one spends money on oil drilling because of lack of investor demand, government regulations, and supply starts coming off, but our demand hasn't come off yet, you could see actually oil stocks in particular do better than you think from now until whenever in the future, that maybe a more substantial demand headwind shows up. So number two would be commodities. And number three would be, of course, there's been a huge amount of fiscal and monetary policy that's been injected into the system, because there was a huge amount of stress on people's jobs, on people's businesses. As time goes, we're taking that away slowly. And so what does that do for, say, debt markets? What does that do for equity markets, or just in general, individuals? You're taking away sometimes unemployment benefits, sometimes small business loans. And so the rubber will meet the road on that. So again, number one will be earnings matter, because now we actually have to execute. Number two is commodities. We're seeing definitely more demand in the short term as we move out of this for commodities. And number three would be, as these policies for fiscal and monetary policy get lessened or taken away, we have to understand there's definitely going to be some ramifications in the markets for that.
Fantastic three themes there and a lot to unpack, Joe. If I can go back to your second theme of commodities, and you touched upon the headwinds traditional energy is going to face. If you can just expand on that and how ESG is influencing your choices and how that landscape has changed from the last year, if you can expand on that and share your insights.
ESG is early innings, and it's definitely something that's developing. It's something, I guess, as an investment professional, we are spending a lot of time on this because there's opportunities and there's definitely threats depending on what sector you're looking at. And even with oil and gas, there's opportunities, there's threats. Over the last little while, we've been doing a lot of work on carbon sequestration, or essentially taking carbon and injecting it into the ground. In some cases, storing it so it never comes out into the atmosphere, or actually putting it into oil and gas well. So oil could come out the other side, essentially. So you're using it to actually develop more oil as well. So just because, you know, there's a lot of headwinds, you know, there's also going to be opportunities. And again, one of the biggest things for our oil producers in Alberta, they've come together and made a goal to be carbon neutral. And one of the biggest things they're trying to focus on is carbon capture, working together to build the infrastructure for that. So I think it's very dangerous to write certain things off as, this is good, this is bad. We live in a very dynamic world. I can remember a number of years ago, everyone thought oil was forever going to go higher. We were going to run out of supply. Then all of a sudden technology changed and we found a whole lot of oil in Texas and places called the Permian. So right now it looks very daunting to get to carbon neutral, but if technologies change or behaviors change, that could also come as a big surprise maybe for the market. But one of the biggest things I think for the oil and gas companies is they are embracing it. So it's not just investors. We're definitely hearing it from our pension clients. We're hearing it from our own investment team. We're hearing it from the CEOs. We're also hearing it from the governments. And that's the thing where this is happening. And so even if one part of that chain doesn't want to adopt, the things are still moving on. And one of the biggest things a lot of these oil companies have to at least adapt to is carbon is not very welcome. And so you have to do something with the carbon. And essentially carbon capture or some kind of technology, there's definitely a lot of eyeballs on it to make sure there's a solution. And of course, there's alternative energies. We're very flexible. If that, you know, we do a lot of work on solar, hydrogen is probably a little further out. Wind and hydro dams are obviously more current levels and very, some cases, actually very competitive with oil and gas. So I think there's a lot of work to be done there. But again, I would say just watch we don't write off certain sectors. Because in the meantime, if we don't spend money on oil and gas drilling, the supply might go down and demand doesn't really move too much in the short term, you could see some tightness that may surprise people.
Okay, excellent. Thoughts on real estate and specifically, does it need to slow down for economic growth in Canada to be sustainable?
Real estate, there's a few buckets there. I'll probably answer all of them. I think they're probably asking more about real estate being homes. But I'll give you the easier ones first. Real estate, there's different groups. The first one probably would be office is probably the one that's in transition. There's definitely some companies have already announced, we're not going to back to the office 5 days a week. That's a headwind. And you have to watch because a lot of those projects are already in the pipeline. They're very big projects. In some cases, these real estate projects have a lot of debt on them. And they didn't plan for a pandemic and a change in office behavior. Again, 2 years ago, no one ever thought some of these major corporations would say certain number of employees can work from home. Another bucket is industrial. There's a huge demand for industrial real estate in the last 2 years. Industrial real estate would be like people selling stuff online and they just need storage. Sometimes it's servers for computer companies and software companies. And it's just industrial real estate. And that has been a big beneficiary last little while because as you can imagine, software, servers, and especially online shopping has definitely grown. Retail still seems to be in demand. It's amazing that people still like shopping. And again, that's one of those things that some of these people like to paint the brush. We'll never go out again. We're only going to do online. Right. The data early on from other countries that we use our Fidelity research globally is that people still like a mixture. They still enjoy going to the mall. Now, again, if you have a what they call a D-level mall or C-level mall that's not very well regarded with not great stores, I think you have some headwinds there. But high level, A level, what they call A level malls, still in demand. Lastly, then, is homes in Canada. This is very interesting because the pandemic essentially opened up an arbitrage. And the most important thing is what I just said. Some people had in their mind, I'm only going to go to work 5 days a week for the rest of my life. I want to be with my family, and that's very important. So the time I commute is very, very important. I want to close that. All of a sudden, you tell that individual, maybe 1, 2, or 3 days or 5 days a week, you can stay home. That opens a huge arbitrage. You're like, well, I was only living in this big city in Canada, which is very expensive, and smaller homes versus what I could get in the suburbs because of that commute. If you open that up, that time arbitrage, I'm willing to buy that house that's in the suburbs or just further out. So some of that's going on. It's just really just a reshaping of housing value as opposed to all the prices are going up. A few years ago, we had some more speculation in the market, and it was more in the bigger cities. Now it's actually more spread out, which is generally healthier. And the other thing too, we have to keep in mind is really the borders for the most part are closed. And I can imagine places outside of Canada, you know, I know we all are dealing with different things with COVID, but in general terms, probably Canada has actually been dealing with it less than other countries. When our borders open up, I could see immigration coming, which will actually be a further driver of demand for home value. So there's a reason this is happening. It's not just speculation. But it definitely bears watching, and obviously interest rates are very low as well.
What a fantastic overview there, because, you know, when investors think about real estate, they may only think about home real estate, but like you just mentioned, commercial, industrial, retail, all these parts are going to be affected in the next 6 months to 12 months. Lots of noise about whether we're in a bubble or not in a bubble. Impact of the pandemic, if it continues. As a portfolio manager in this type of environment, how does your process help to monitor the investment landscape, and how far in advance do you look?
We look as far as we can possibly go, but I would say from a stock and from a stock market perspective, you have to embrace your own ignorance. It gets foggier the further you go out. Calling bubbles is not easy in terms of bubbles of a stock or bubbles of a market. Again, we really want to impart on investors. We're trying to not own the market. We're trying to own the best of breed of Canada, the best, say, 50 companies in Canada or globally, depending on who your portfolio manager is. We're not looking to make a bet on the market. We're looking to invest alongside great companies. And sometimes I just remind people that like, you know, there's all this noise of, you know, it's not noise, it's true, COVID. But if we go back, it's someone's talking about interest rates, someone's talking about inflation. We go back further, someone's talking about years ago, something going on in the Middle East, something going on in North Korea. So I just remind people, okay, all those things, all these macro concerns you have that make a lot of noise in newspapers, which is good, because that's how you sell a newspaper. If I told you something's going to happen in the Middle East or inflation's going to go up or down, are you less likely or will you buy no Apple products in the next year? And you're like, oh no, I still want my iPhone. I'm still going to listen to Apple Music and I'm still going to buy movies on Apple TV. Exactly. That's a great business, right? You can debate the stock price itself, but that's a great business. Dollarama. There's a lot of stuff going on. You know, as Canadians, you know, do you really think you're going to buy no goods from Dollarama for next year if something happens in America or something happens in South America or interest rates go up even 200 basis points? Probably not. So again, what drives individual stocks is not usually what happens in the macro concerns that make the newspapers. And so we do a lot of work on the macro stuff. But we really drive down to what are the great companies, what are the great CEOs that we want to invest alongside, and let's focus on those.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that concept, Joe, about speculation and not betting on the market, but betting on good quality companies. That leads me to my next question about just the value of advice from financial advisors and how they help investors navigate through that market noise, like you just mentioned. They take a very holistic approach to one's finances. Can you talk about the advantage there?
Yeah, I put in this perspective. I embrace my own ignorance and I kind of know what I'm good at, what I'm not good at. Emily, I'm not good at cooking, so I'm not going to cook, right? But, you know, more serious aside, when I go to build my house, I pay for good service to build a home. If I go do my accounting for my taxes, I'm not doing them because I want the best in terms of service and I'll pay up for it for that service. because I know the flip side of that is a lot of heartache and probably a hit to my checkbook if it doesn't go well. So I got some good advice from a very successful entrepreneur a number of years ago. And he said, you know, what I do well is my business. That's what makes me money. I just focus on my business. I have financial advice I pay for. And he reminded me, you get what you pay for. So if you want to get cheap, that's fine. But don't cry later. But if you want good investment advice, just like any kind of advice, pay up for it, judge it, watch it. But he said, I don't read the financial news. I don't read the stock market's news. I don't look at tickers. I don't worry about it because you know what? I focus on what my moneymaker is, which is my business. And it gives me more time with my family and it relieves a lot of stress in my life. And I would say, you know, hopefully we all can come to that. And if someone can do financial investing on their own and do an amazing job with it, by all means, I think, you know, we focus the same way. If you can, you know, do your own taxes and build your own house, go for it. But I think you really have to watch that if you build a certain amount of wealth doing something, it's sometimes, I know myself, I always watch, you know, does that individual know the same expertise in that other field? And you just, right. You can't always assume that. And when you look back, I think in advisors, you know, there's a number of things with taxes, you know, should I roll this over? What about my mortgage? Can I take this out? What is an RSP? What are these grants? What is an RRSP? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of big things. But one big thing I would say, if you just look in Excel sheet and say, I'm going to have 10% return for 30 years. Well, the advisor, what if the advisor, I do it on my own and it's not 10, it's 0 or 2. 0, 2, 5, 10, there is a big, big difference. So for an advisor, you should be looking for, do they give me decent returns? And number two, do they keep me in the market? Because one of the toughest things a lot of people don't realize, if you do 10% in an Excel sheet for 30 years, but all of a sudden for 4 years you're in, 2 years you're out, 4 years you're in, 2 years you're out, the returns are massively different. So if you can provide, you know, strong financial advice to someone and keep them in the market, it's a huge benefit.
Absolutely. Great message there about trusting the experts. Everybody's in different stages of their lives. But if it's the route you want to take, you know, trust that financial advice. You mentioned commodities and trade. To what extent does the Canadian dollar and currency play into your investment process?
The Canadian dollar is one of those things we look at. I think it's the kind of 80-20 rule. There's probably a lot of noise about currencies in general. Again, we go back to usually strong businesses overcome currency. If your business is susceptible to currency, you're not in a good business. So it's something we look at. Generally, the Canadian dollar, probably for our audience, usually does well and our commodities are doing well. It helps our trade balance in particular. And usually our Canadian dollar, the number two is how we're doing relative to the US. Both countries, you know, happily are actually doing decently in terms of other G7 countries. So our currency is strong, but not going, you know, off in terms of a very high number versus the US, but it's definitely doing well predominantly from our commodity outlook.
Joe, just wanted you to summarize as we sort of settle into the second half of the year, how are you positioned in the next 6 months and into 2022 to capture as much upside and as little downside?
Yeah, I think, Emily, when it comes to the outlook, we're really looking at certain sectors are probably going to benefit from opening up. Again, there's these names we've already mentioned in groups like financials, energy. Some are being held back, you know, in terms of financials just because of the regulator. The regulator says we want to be really conservative. The U.S. recently has allowed them now to deploy capital and give it back to shareholders. That may happen, of course, in Canada. We'll see when the regulator decides that. But you have some very strong balance sheets and companies that have actually, you know, done very well over the last period, which was very, very tough. I think you have to watch, though, on the flip side, there are some companies that definitely benefited because of our shutdown that may not see as much growth. And some of that might be the consumer staples, could be grocers. Also, too, I think the bigger thing, we just have to understand that, you know, not everything is going to open the same way. Some countries are not going to open as well as we are, or maybe the U.S. And so you have to watch for travel. And you also have to watch for just behaviors. I mean, not everyone's going to go back to the office 5 days a week. So there's certain companies that relied on that. And maybe that's offices. Maybe that's even just companies that wanted us driving and stuck in traffic and benefit from that. So I think it's very careful to watch. There's definitely going to be some winners and losers. We used the K-shaped recovery last year. You may see similar K-shaped recovery comments in the next 12 months.
Joe, as director of research, I know you've spoken on many occasions about the depth of our Fidelity team, the depth of our research team. But can you just expand on this and let the audience know the edge we have over other financial firms and how that's going to help us, you know, pull through 2021 and into the next year?
Emily, I'm just so happy that we have such a talented investment group. We have 300 investment professionals around the world making my job easier and, more importantly, making our investors happy. So when you worry about these things like macro concerns or, you know, different kinds of things going on in sectors or technology, well, is that noise? Is that something meaningful? Is that something I should worry about? You know that even when you're sleeping, someone around the world at Fidelity, those 300 investment professionals, is reading research, talking to CEOs, doing research that, you know, in terms of like the sector, what's going on, and deciding what's meaningful, what's an opportunity, and what's actually a real threat. And it's just so enlightening for us because, again, it's usually there's no subject where it's like, you know what, I don't know what's going on there, and I don't really have, you know, any kind of insights. You just say, you know what, let's look into it. And usually you can pull something up on my computer. I can see a note that's already been written about it. And some expert somewhere around the world says, oh, yes, this is our view. And this is a strength. This is an opportunity. And so it really makes investing amazing, a lot of fun. But more importantly, it gives us a huge advantage when it comes to a lot of very dynamic things going on in the world.
If you can just quickly wrap up those three main investment themes investors should be looking at when it comes to our Canadian economy.
I would say, Emily, number one would be, you know, earnings. We really have to watch how earnings are going to be coming through. Number two would be commodities. As we move forward and open up these economies, there'll be more demand for them, which is positive for the Canadian market. And number three, we have to watch that monetary and fiscal policy will be pulled away slightly on the margin, which will potentially have some ramifications in interest rates or other parts of the market.
Joe, thank you so much for joining me today. It was a great discussion. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and your time with the investors on the line. I'm sure they appreciate it as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Emily.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice. And if you like what you're hearing, leave a review or a 5-star rating. You can visit fidelity.ca for more information on future live webcasts, and don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter. Thanks again. See you next time.